I want you to make sure you find Revelation chapter 3. We are in the sixth part of seven parts when it comes to the letters in the book of Revelation. And so when we look at these letters, we know that John was on the Isle of Patmos. We know that he was imprisoned there from the Roman government because he loved Jesus. He was preaching Jesus, who was crucified, risen again, and he is the Lord of all. The Romans said, you need to stop preaching or we're going to put you in jail. Well, we know that John was the last living apostle. All the others had been murdered because of their preaching and profession of Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. So while John was in prison, Jesus comes to him. Not in a dream, but a vivid visit. When all of his glory, and this is the only time that we read that Jesus came in all of his glory, he said to John, I want you to write down everything you see and everything you hear. Now, John didn't come up with a list of excuses like I probably would have been. But everything he saw, whether he understood it or not, he wrote it down. And it starts off in the book of Revelation with these seven letters that Jesus wanted John to write and then give to these seven churches, who are all located in an area called Asia Minor. And for 10 extra points, what is that modern country today? Turkey. And that's where these churches were hosted and homed there. And it's like Jesus gave us this view of these churches. And I have this image for you this morning because I think it vividly helps us understand the condition of these churches. Each one of these letters so far accomplishes two things. Number one, Jesus always gives another revelation of who he is, who the author of these letters really is. And then each one of the letters was a specific encouragement or correction to those people. We know that typically the letters followed three main points. There was a commendation. In other words, here's what I think you're doing wonderful. You're doing good. Thank you. Now, there was one church that didn't even get one commendation. There was nothing that Jesus offered to say, you're doing good at. Second, he said, I want to give you some correction. And there were several churches. Five out of the seven, they got correction. But two, Jesus didn't need to give them any correction at all. And do you remember what the third point was in most of these letters? Encouragement. And what is the root word for encouragement? I usually pick on Chris, but he's not here. He's out of town with family. Courage. And really, that I want to give you some courage, how to survive. Every one of these cities were going through trials. Every one of these churches were filled with people who are struggling. And so, just to help you remember where we were, I wanted, first of all, remember we talked about Ephesus. That was the forgetful church. You forgot your first love. You know your theology. You know your doctrine. You've got great head knowledge, but you have no passion. You forgot your first love and loving me and loving others. And then we went to the church in Smyrna. And those are wonderful believers who love Jesus no matter the consequence. They were definitely in the suffering church. They were struggling. They were being persecuted like no other of the seven. They were losing their jobs. They were losing their lives. Yet Jesus gave them encouragement. They did not have to have any correction. Do you remember where we went after Smyrna? See, I don't have the map up here for you to be cheating. Anyone remember where we went? You're it could be this, could be that. We went to Pergamum. Pergamum was the compromising church. Remember the letter referred to the spirit of Jezebel in that congregation. They were compromising the truth of Jesus and what he taught, and there was more culture in the church than the church affecting the culture. There was too much of the city of Pergamum in the church, and they watered down, they were compromising, and there was this big struggle. Can't we all just coexist? Do you remember that image I put up there? And Jesus was very emphatic. He says, I am the only way, I am the only truth. No one comes to the Father except through me. And so it was a compromising church. And then we traveled over to Thyatira. That's the one I love to say the most. I don't know why, but I love saying Thyatira. That church was divided. They were self-imploding, mainly over the doctrine and also how to love one another and setting aside, dividing up people. And the humanity of the church began to erode the calling of the church. And then we went over to Sardis. And that was the complacent church. They had a lot of good things going for them. Jesus listed a lot of good things, but they just didn't do anything with what God gave them to do. They established the ministry, they established the church, but they weren't actually making headway. They wanted to be more religious than anything, but they just didn't go. They just didn't do anything, and they became complacent. What was another synonymous word for complacent? Do you remember? Maybe our Facebook friends will have to tell us that one. All right? They were just in neutral. When a challenge came, they didn't see the challenge as an opportunity. And when blessings came, they just wanted more of those. They were just complacent. They weren't doing anything. Where do you suppose we're going to go now? Now we're at the sixth stop of our book of Revelation. Anyone know where we're going now? Philadelphia. Well, that's good. Let's go to Pennsylvania now. No, it's not that Philadelphia. It is the church located in Philadelphia. And you've noticed I wrote on there, every church had a theme about the letter. And if you look into a lot of commentaries, a lot of other sermons and writings, a lot of times they'll call this church the faithful church. Now, there's been other letters so far that have described the members as faithful. Jesus describes the church in Philadelphia. You are little, but you still have faith left. Why? When you read a little bit of the history of what happened to the church in Philadelphia and what Rome did to the city of Philadelphia, and you begin to read the very unique things that Jesus said about Philadelphia, you're going to realize that this is the betrayed church. Think about that. What's another word for betrayed? Let down. Okay, someone, something let you down. Anything else? Betrayed. Doesn't that seem personal? You're violated. You were let down, you're violated. Now, as we have every single Sunday, instead of me reading the letter, we've used a video. Now, if you look at the the archaeology of Ephesus, the only thing left in this city are two rather large, for lack of a better word, towers. But they weren't very tall. They're about 70 feet, and they might be about 50 feet in diameter. That's the only thing left in the city of Philadelphia. So I want you to listen. This video is going to share with you now our text. Again, it's found in the third chapter of Revelation. We're going to start with verse 7, and it goes to verse 13.
And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, "These things says he who is holy, who is true, he who has the key of David, he who opens and no one shuts and shuts and no one opens. I know your works. See, I have set before you an open door, and no one can shut it. For you have a little strength, have kept my word, and have not denied my name. Indeed, I will make those of the synagogue of Satan who say they are Jews and are not, but lie, indeed, I will make them come and worship before your feet, and to know that I have loved you. Because you have kept my command to persevere, I also will keep you from the hour of trial which shall come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth. Behold, I am coming quickly. Hold fast what you have, that no one may take your crown. He who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go out no more. And I will write on him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God, and I will write on him my new name. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches.
All right, so I love that guy's voice. That's why I just want to bless you with that guy's voice. Isn't that a soothing, authoritative voice? Every one of these letters, as I mentioned a moment ago, talks about a certain feature or character or trait of who Jesus is, identifying markers. And every letter talks just some unusual thoughts that Jesus wrote down. One of them, did you catch that thought? The devil's synagogue? It's like, whoa, what's that? Who is that? And talking about the end times. So when we talk about the Church of Philadelphia, it's the betrayed church. How were they betrayed? Well, first, a little historical thing. We're going to talk about how the city was betrayed. Now, the city was betrayed, and we don't really get that in our text, but in our Bible history classes, and whether in just regular historical documents, we know that in AD 17, they experienced an earthquake in Philadelphia that literally destroyed everything but those two towers that you saw there a moment ago. Now, again, Philadelphia was supposed to be a model Roman city. Remember, Rome was on the other side of the Aegean Sea, and here's Asia Minor in Turkey, and it was totally devastated. This is the second city in Asia Minor that was totally destroyed by an earthquake. What was unique about this earthquake that the aftershocks lasted for 20 years. I literally had to reread that again. And then I went to, the theologian of the day, Google, just to double check that. It was like, the aftershocks lasted for 20 years. How many of you have homeowners insurance, right? And when something happens, you call the insurance company. Well, this is a Roman city. And so when the earthquake happened in AD 17, they called Rome and said, hey, Rome, we literally just experienced an earthquake. And in fact, the aftershocks are still going. Will you come and help us? And so, of course, Rome promised help. The government, Rome, the authorities, they promised that they would come and help them. But they never did. They were devastated. Businesses were destroyed. Homes were destroyed. People were displaced. And they were trying to find shelter, trying to find food. They kept on calling out to the government, help us, help us, help us. And the government, Rome, said, sure, we'll help you. No problem. But they never showed up. In other words, maybe like a politician. Remember, I don't think we have any like that today. But they say one thing and they do something else. Or they make you a promise and it never comes true. Just going to be a little while longer, and the people struggled for years and years. Families struggled. They got a word from Rome. Rome said, you don't have to pay taxes to us for 5 years. What kind of help is that? Your business has been destroyed, your homes have been destroyed, and you get a letter from the IRS, International Roman whatever, you don't have to pay your taxes for 5 years. How gracious was that? They don't have businesses anymore. They don't have income anymore. They don't have anything. All of their livestock gone. Everything is gone. But hey, you don't have to pay taxes. Your friend FICA doesn't have to show up on your paycheck anymore. Was that helpful? Well, they did something. Well, Rome did show up. One day, the boats came over, dropped off all the army, and they came into Philadelphia after they marched across, and they weren't there like the Corps of Engineers. They were actually the Corps of Destruction. They came in and totally wiped out all their vineyards. They were known for growing the best grapes. Now, what did Rome like? Grapes. Why did they like grapes? Wine. In fact, isn't that where some of the best wine came from, or maybe still comes from? So Caesar sent his army over to Philadelphia, not to rebuild the city, but to make sure that it will no longer compete in their wine and vineyard business. And the army came in and totally devastated their fertile vineyards out of jealousy and the need to control the people. Do you think the city felt betrayed? Think they were calling their city council? You got to talk with the governor. You got to talk with the Roman officials. They have literally destroyed and took away all of our hope. And that's what Rome did. They would come and conquer you, even if you were Roman citizens, and they would always manipulate control over you so that you would not be independent or you would not have hope to become independent. Sorry, can't do anything about the earthquake. That's a God hazard, and your insurance policy doesn't cover God accidents. What was that called on your acts of God? You're not covered. And so they destroyed. How do you think all the members of the town felt? Betrayed, right? Wouldn't you? So the city was betrayed. And then here's another form of betrayal. And then the Christians, they were betrayed by the religious leaders. Now we know that they began to come together by their own accord. They began to rebuild here, rebuild there, build businesses, build homes, and they would build a synagogue. The Christians, they would follow. So you know the missionary trips, that they went on, they'd go establish these churches. Christians were persecuted. They too were scattered. And they knew that they could find a welcome in the Jewish community and the synagogue. See, Christians and Jews were of one. They came together. But what happened in Philadelphia happened in a lot of the other towns as well. So let's say that there's a synagogue in Philadelphia, and they were a community. They relied on one another, and they supported one another, and they saw some Christians come in their way. Okay, fine. And the Christians would come in, and they would be part of the community. They would be part of the synagogue. But what happened when you start teaching and preaching Jesus as the resurrected Messiah in a Jewish synagogue? Oh, no. Wait a minute. You are our guests. We invited you. We can talk about the Torah. We can talk about Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all that. But you know, we understand Jesus. Yes, he was a good teacher as well, a good rabbi. But you know what? There's too many of you now in the synagogue, and you won't stop preaching about Jesus as being the Messiah, the resurrected Messiah. We don't believe he's come yet. And so you saw the synagogue began to have this the ruffling in the waves. And so what happened was the Jewish leaders came in and they said, "We've welcomed them long enough. We don't agree anymore. All the Christians, whether you're a Gentile or Jewish Christian, you no longer are welcomed in our synagogue. You can't be a part of our church anymore." And so the Jewish leaders literally kicked them out of the door, just kicked them straight out, locked the door. And so the Christians now, they didn't have that community anymore. They didn't have the interaction. They didn't have community reliance with one another. They were betrayed by the people of religion, God's chosen people. They were betrayed by them. So instead of the Jewish leaders endorsing them and supporting them, they kicked them out of the church if you profess Jesus Christ. Now because of this, families were divided. Because of this, these Christians, whether they're Jewish blood or not, they were shamed in the community. Aren't you supposed to be part of the synagogue? Aren't you supposed to be part of the Jewish family? No, I got kicked out. And it was a shame that they had. And literally, their names were removed from the church roster. Now, how many of you think that's important? Well, you're in a church that doesn't keep membership, so none of you really thought that was important, right? But in the Jewish world, and at that time, Rome said, Jews do not have to profess Caesar as Lord. Now that was really important if you're a Jew and a Christian, right? Because remember, Roman ideology was that Caesar was Lord, he was Savior, and you had to worship him. And remember, we talked about all the temples. And so if your name was found on the roster, then the Roman soldiers did not persecute you or arrest you because you did not say that Caesar is Lord. So imagine, Christian, you got kicked out of the synagogue. Your name has been purged from the roster. Now, if a Roman soldier sees you and he doesn't see you at the temple, he doesn't see you paying your offerings to Caesar and declare Caesar as Lord, he's going to say, where are your Jewish papers? Where are your, where's your authorization? They'll go to the synagogue. Hey, is Bill Ritter on the list, on the roster? No, we removed their name. Fine, what did the soldiers go do then? They arrested them. And if they had a job, they didn't get any time off. The father couldn't provide for the family. Again, the city has been rebuilding aftershocks for 20 years. It seems like everywhere they go, they're being rejected. And now the church is betraying them. Aren't you glad that the church never betrays anyone now? These people seem like they were driving uphill with their brakes on, right? Every time they were trying to do something, it seems like life got harder and harder. In fact, Jesus said, there's just a few of you left who are faithful. So the city was betrayed. Christians were betrayed. What's left? This letter. Timely letter that Jesus wrote to these believers who are few but still faithful, being betrayed by their government and being betrayed by the church, the religious leaders. And so now we have Christ's blessings to those who have been betrayed. Think about this for a second. When we look at Christ and these letters he writes to them, he knows their situation. He knows their problem. And this is what he says in chapter 3, verse 8. He goes, I know all the things you do, and I have opened a door for you that no one closes. I know what you've been going through, he says. I know that you've been betrayed. I know life has been very difficult, but you haven't given up on me. And then this whole letter is out about how Jesus blesses them. And you look at these blessings, we see these blessings that he portrayed comes underneath two categories. First, he wants to bless them with his identity. Now, understand, most of these Christians have never met Jesus, right? They didn't see him face to face. Most of these believers heard about Jesus through the apostles, of whom only one is yet living. They've heard about Jesus. They've heard the teachings about Jesus that are being passed down. And he says, I want you to know who I am. And my friends, if the church isn't telling its people who Jesus Christ really is, then we're missing our highest calling of all. If we don't declare Jesus Christ as the only way, the only truth, then we're missing it out and we're going to be compromising what we're supposed to be talking about, for it's Jesus and Jesus only. So you got to ask yourself, who is Jesus? Now, let's read that in verse 7. Who is Jesus? Now, he says, this is the message from the one who is holy and true. The one who has the key of David, and the one who opens, no one can close. And what he closes, no one opens. Now, this is fascinating. Did you see who Jesus was in here? He says, I am the holy and true one. What does holy mean? Set apart, unique, different. There's no other like the Son of God. There has been a lot of false messiahs coming. He says, I am the Holy One. I am God. And that's what he got himself in trouble with the Hebrew leaders, the Jews. He claimed that he was God. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. I am the Son of God. I am the One. And that got him in trouble. He says, I am the Holy One, the Son of God. He says, but I'm the true one as well. I am the only true one. And you have to profess me as Lord if you want to have life. He says, and I hold what? The key of David. That was an interesting phrase. I hold the key of David. How many of you lost your keys before? Yeah, a lot of us have lost our keys, all right? How many of you asked your family member, have you seen my keys? All right? And the family members will say, I don't know, they're your keys. You own those keys. If I have my keys out here, you know that those belong to me. I hold the keys to that 2012 Silverado. No one else does. It's my key. He says, I hold the key of David. David, who was he in the life of a Jew? He was a servant of God. In fact, he was a king that God made him. And when you look at David, the city of David, we talk about Jerusalem, right? You know, it always references to Jerusalem or God's people, the people of David. And who was in the genealogy of the family tree of David? Jesus. He says, I hold the key to all of Jerusalem, all Jews. I am in charge of all the Jews. And those people who have kicked you out, you're not accountable to them. They're accountable to me. In fact, I would have never kicked you out because what he says, I open doors that people have closed. Who was kicked out of the church? The Christians. I open the doors that some have closed. And you know what? I close doors that some have opened. And I will keep them closed and I will keep the other ones open. I am the one who is supreme. Do you see the supremacy of Christ here? He is sovereign. The Jewish leaders aren't sovereign. They're being selfish. They're trying to control you and manipulate you. The government, they're not sovereign. They're trying to control you, manipulate you, tease you with, oh, you don't have to pay taxes. We give you a break. Jesus says, you need to know who I am. If you know who I am, then you naturally begin to fall in line with what his blessings of his promises are. I love that portion. Let's go to verse 8 in chapter 3. And help me try to find the blessings that God gives to these betrayed believers. I'm going to give you a hint. There are four blessings. He says in verse 8, I know all the things you do. I have opened a door for you that no one can close. You have little strength, but you obeyed my word and did not deny me. Look, I will force those who belongs to Satan's synagogue. Oh, do you have an idea who that might be now? He says, those, they're liars who say that they are Jews, but they're actually not. They'll come down and they'll bow down to your feet. They will acknowledge that you are the ones that I love. Verse 10, because you have obeyed my command to preserve, he says, I will protect you from the great time of testing that will come upon the entire world to test those who belong in this world. I am coming soon, he says. Hold on to what you have heard. Hold on to what you have so that no one will take away your crown. All who are victorious, they'll become like pillars in the temple of my God. And they will never have to leave it. Why? Remember, they feel like they've been betrayed, rejected. He says, you'll be like a pillar. You'll never have to leave the house of God. He says, and I will write them the name of my God, and they will be citizens of my city, of my God, the New Jerusalem, that comes down from heaven, and my God. And I will also write them my new name. And anyone who has ears to hear must listen to the Spirit and understand what he is saying to the churches. Did you see those blessings? Weren't they encouragement to the people who are being betrayed? He goes, yeah, you've been treated poorly. You've been told you can't meet anymore. You can't meet anymore. You can't gather anymore. You're kicked out of this place because Jesus is on your lips. Fine. Have you been kicked out of the house of God? No. He says, listen, I'm going to make sure that those betrayers will bow down to you. You're not the one betrayed. They're going to come down and they're eventually going to bow down to you. Now, I'm going to tell you up front, I really don't know how that works out in eschatology. I really don't know what's going to happen. But I know that at one point, those of us who remain faithful to the Lord will see those who haven't. And those who haven't remained faithful will see your faithfulness and they will be caught. They will be disciplined, they will be punished, and they will see your great reward in heaven. Those people who have betrayed you, God says they will get their just reward. Those people who have betrayed Jesus, they will get their just reward. And if you're like me, you want it to happen now. Right? You want... God, do you realize that we're being told we can't be the church anymore? We're supposed to shut down. God, do you realize that we're told we're not essential anymore? Aren't you going to do something about it? Why aren't you removing these people from office? Remember in Rome, I'm not talking about California. I'm talking about Rome right now. How come you're allowing them to be in office? Why are you allowing us to go through this? Don't you know that they're telling us we're not essential? God, you said we're essential. You said that no one's going to come against, not even hell can come against your church, Lord. But we're being kicked out of our own building, Lord. He says, I'm sovereign. I'm sovereign over time. I'm sovereign over situation. I'm sovereign even over you. I've got all things in my hand. Whether you understand it, which you won't, I've got all things in my hand. That would make a great kids song, wouldn't it? That we need to remember. All you got to do is remain faithful that you know that I've got this. And those who have betrayed you, they will recognize that what? I do love you. The Jews, did they appreciate the Gentiles? No. They never respected them, and they kicked them out of the house. He says, I promise that I'm coming soon. How many have ever read in any part of the scripture that God's coming soon? How many of you are asking, well, when is he coming? Every generation says he's coming now. Look at the signs out there. How many of you have seen signs lately? We went through this year the signs of the end times, and we're talking about that. It seems like there's so many check marks of Bible prophecy that God is putting together, but they're all not checked off yet. He says, I'm coming soon. And God's timing is not like our timing. I know you want God to fix things now. And you don't like when God says, but be patient and wait. God will give you 12% if you come now. He doesn't work like that. Why? Because he's sovereign. He's omniscient. He's got all these things that he's putting together. And he's not wanting to come back until everyone's had a chance to hear Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Do you know anyone who has not professed Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior yet? If you do, you shouldn't haste the day to come. You shouldn't haste the day because they need to know about Jesus. A lot of people who are angry at God because God didn't perform the way they wanted. Some people today even feel like God betrayed them. I can understand that. Oftentimes, that's when the people of God betrayed them and they blame God. And they're angry at God. There's a lot of anger at God out there. There's a lot of anger at the church out there. You know, sometimes we deserve some of that discipline, church. Believers, we deserve some of that. We've been hypocritical. We've been selfish. But isn't it a fact that within every one of these churches, there's always been a remnant of the faithful ones? And I'm hoping we're part of that remnant and that we love those who have betrayed us the way Jesus loved. And that's hard to do. It's hard to do. He says, but hang in there. I'm coming soon. Are you glad that God didn't tell us when he's coming? Okay, we're in church. We're supposed to say yes. But it's almost like, don't you wish you knew how many days you have left to live? I don't think so. I need to treat every day like this is my last day, my last hope, my last opportunity. And God is saying, I will come when time is ready. You need to act as though I'm coming now. He says to these betrayed believers, don't worry. The time's coming. I will come back. That's a blessing. He said another blessing, you'll become like a pillar in my Father's house. Now, they understood pillars because remember they were in a Roman society, right? Now, what happened in AD 17 to all those pillars in Philadelphia? They all came crashing down. None of the pillars were left. He says, in my Father's house, you will be like a pillar that is sturdy, that is strong. He says that no one will destroy. You want stability. How many of you are tired of just being knocked down, trial after trial, crisis after crisis? I feel like that sometimes. See, when I'm in God's presence, I don't know when that's going to happen. Hopefully later, not sooner. I won't have that roller coaster of spiritual fervor for God, the trials of this world, the suffering that we're going through. I will be like a pillar, strong and sturdy in the house of God. And nothing's going to shake me. Nothing's going to destroy me. And I will be victorious. But that's not yet. But don't you know God says today you can be firm. You can be stable. Trust in me. Acknowledge me in all your ways. And I will make your path straight. And then he promises you'll be a family member for eternity. God's going to give you a new name. He's going to give you a new identity. He's going to stamp. He's going to tattoo your name, loved one. Son, daughter, right on your heart. And no one's ever going to be able to kick you out of the membership of God's house. Who got kicked out of the house? The believers got kicked out of God's house. He says, but one day, no one's going to be able to kick you out. But there's only one way to get in. And that is through Jesus Christ. And he does not decide and pick, okay, you. For anyone who professes Jesus Christ as Lord of their life, Savior, shall be saved. And you get all the old things are gone, and behold, you become born again, new. And your name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And on that roster, nothing, and this is the second time we've talked about this, nothing or no one can remove your name from the Lamb's Book of Life. Religious leaders can't say you're not good enough. Religious leaders can't say that you're not of faith enough. God says, if I'm in your life and you allow me to come in your life as Savior and Lord, I'm going to write your name in the Lamb's Book of Life. And no one, no government, no one else will be able to remove your name from the Lamb's Book of Life. You have that assurity. Wouldn't you say those are blessings? Why? Because they needed encouragement in these sufferings that they were experiencing. You'll be a pillar. You're going to be there forever. I'm going to say a word that some of us, I'm going to just surprise you right now. In conclusion.
Yeah, right.
One page.
Wow.
In conclusion. The Church of Philadelphia, there were a few faithful followers. And even though they were betrayed by their government and even by some in the church, the betrayed believers, they never compromised. They never gave up. And I am sorry to say that I have witnessed over the period of my lifetime people of faith, but when a challenge, a trial, suffering occurred because, number one, maybe they made bad choices. Or number two, someone made bad choices and affected that person's life. It seems like if God doesn't perform, we give up. Instead of being kicked out of the church, kicked out of God's family, we voluntarily leave because God didn't protect us from any hardships. And I'm afraid it's the church's fault that some people feel this way. Because pastors and teachers have failed to remind things of what Jesus said. Take heart. In this world, you'll struggle. You'll have trials. But be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. Have hope. Because the hope I give you is not like what the world gives you. You will suffer. In fact, God says trials and temptations will come your way, not really to discipline you, but it is a reason, but to cause your faith to grow. I don't know about you. I'd rather go to God's aisle number 14 and get all the blessings I want, fill them in my cart, and check out. Wouldn't that be nice? But God says blessings come through the teardrops sometimes. Strength comes from the struggle sometimes. You will. Well, Pastor, I don't think that's biblical. Well, look at the life of Jesus. Did he struggle? Was he ridiculed? Yeah. The betrayed believers, I think, fill the churches today. People have been betrayed by church leaders, and people have been betrayed by civic leaders. And you just wonder, who can you trust? Pastors have betrayed the trust that parents put in watching their children. Predators have been allowed in the church. Some church leaders have turned a blind eye to sin in the church. Well, if we address that sin, they may not come to church anymore. And if they don't come to church anymore, guess what we don't get? Their tithe, their money. There have been churches that have let parishioners down. And I'm sorry to say that there's too many examples of that. And I believe we are living in a season of change. How many have ever experienced, a lot of us not here in California, but in the Midwest, you can tell when the season of winter is giving way to the season of spring. You know how you can tell? Storms. The hot and the cold masses of air come colliding together. Why? Because the seasons are changing. I don't know about you, but there's been a lot of spiritual colliding lately in our world and in our culture. Why? Because I believe in God's design, the seasons are changing. And guess what we're making sure we're changing into? The season of the end times. And we've already read that once that starts, there is no stopping. And in fact, once it starts, it accelerates. And God is looking for the few, the faithful. Maybe that's where the Marines got it. I don't know. I hope so. But he's looking probably to sift out the church right now. And I believe the church in America is filled with a lot of members. But I'm not sure if all those members are going to become pillars in the house of God. That's heavy, I know. Betrayed believers, they need to exercise and grow in numbers today. But I'm afraid there are fewer than we anticipate. What did Jesus say? What does he say to these people in Philadelphia who have been betrayed? Maybe what he's saying to us today, right now. He is telling everybody today who maybe feels betrayed by the church leaders, who maybe feels betrayed that our nation maybe is not acting like one nation under God, but maybe one nation over God. How do we feel when people have betrayed us? What does Jesus tell us? He says, I notice your struggles. Isn't that the saddest thing when you're going through pain, suffering? No one cares. No one pays attention to it. In fact, I know people have said, just get over it. But you know, Jesus notices our struggle. I want you to open up the book of Hebrews. I want you to read something with me. Hebrews chapter 4. This is the kind of Messiah that we love and we serve and that we long for. We read in Hebrews chapter 4, verses 14 to 16. He says, So since we have such a great high priest, and who's that? Jesus. Who entered into heaven, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold firmly to what we believe. This high priest of ours understands our weaknesses. For he faced all the same testings that we do. Yet he did not sin. Verse 16, so let us come together boldly to the throne of our glorious God. There we will receive his mercy, and we will find his grace to help us when we need it most. It sounds like that was written just to the church in Philadelphia, doesn't it? Who were betrayed on both sides of the coin. But it's written to us as well. We have a great high priest who's able to empathize with what we're going through. Sympathize and empathize with us. He knows we're struggling. He sees your tears. Sometimes he wipes them away, and sometimes he uses them to water what's happening in your life. His goal, his priorities. How many of you would rather God take away all your suffering, all your hurts, all your trials? You're lying right now. I do too. But I am a person of faith, and my faith says, even though it might be experiencing aftershocks, it says, but God will never leave me. He'll never forsake me. There's nowhere I can go where I can escape God's love. No one, no principality, nothing can take me away from God's love. And I have a God who notices me. Jesus noticed my suffering. Why? Because he suffered as well. Do you know how he suffered? Do you know some of the things he experienced? Did Jesus ever experience betrayal? Obviously by people that didn't love him or know him, right? Who was he most betrayed by? The closest to him. The people that he was going to leave the whole ministry. He basically in his will said, here it is, that's yours. And those are the people who betrayed him the most. Was Jesus ever tempted? So if you've been betrayed, Jesus has been betrayed. And if you've been tempted and you've given into temptation, obviously Jesus never would be tempted because he's God. He's fully human as well. And he was out in the desert for how many days? Being tempted day after day. He didn't have the weekends off. He said in 1 Peter, we're tempted. He was tempted in every way, we're tempted. Yet he did something that I never did. He accomplished something I never accomplished. Yet he did not sin. I have thrown so many spiritual hissy fits. You know what? That doesn't really get God's attention anymore. He notices my spiritual spatters. He knows when I'm playing the poor, pitiful me. And no one comes to my poor pity party. But he's there. He's the father to the fatherless. Was Jesus ever frustrated? Yeah. Remember when he threw around some tables? Just outside of his father's house. And people, who did he get frustrated most with? The sinners out there? Or the quote unquote saints in here? What do you think you're doing? And I think if he would visit the church in Philadelphia, he would tell those Jews who thought they were Jews and God's chosen, you're really not. In fact, one day I'm going to prove to you how much I love these Christians because they are going to be sitting by my feet next to me in my Father's house. And you're judging them because of your DNA? What about your heart? For God looks at the inside. Was Jesus ever weary? Doesn't anybody love me? How many times did we hear that Jesus wept? Oh, you only read it once in the Bible. But we talk about when Lazarus died, what did Jesus do? He cried. He was mourning. Jesus has gone through all the... When he needed to rely on people, they let him down too. Jesus also experienced a struggle of disappointment. He struggled because he experienced rejection. He struggled because he experienced sorrow. Such sorrow that he even sweated blood drops. You and I can never imagine that. Jesus struggled because he experienced ridicule. Ridicule that led him to the cross. But did Jesus ever experience loneliness? Yeah. Notice I didn't say aloneness, but loneliness. People betrayed him. Yeah, the humans betrayed him. What about his relationship with God the Father? Was there ever a separation between he and his Father? When he took upon my sin on the cross, your sin on the cross, and God had to turn his back away from him, and the moment he felt that God turning his back, what did he say? My God, why have you forsaken me? But Jesus loved you and I so much, he didn't want you to think he didn't notice what you're struggling with. It reminds me of a sermon, a message that Brenda and Lori and I did about masks. We come in so many Sunday after Sunday, we put on our masks, everything's fine, right? But in real life, everything's not fine. It is just falling apart and we are struggling. Jesus notices, my friends. But there's also another thing. He says, I will restore you. I will restore you back to wholeness. I love Isaiah 40. Those who trust in the Lord will what? Renew their strength. They will not grow weary. They will not grow faint, but they will soar like... You notice there's one word. They will. One day, in the right season, the right time. I like 1 Peter 5:10 says, and the God of grace will restore you even after you've suffered for a while. Well, if God really loved me, he wouldn't let me suffer. I don't want anything to do with this church. I'm out of here. God didn't protect me from that trial, that abuse, the neglect. No. People let you down. Possibly good-hearted people let you down. God never will. Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden. What will I give you? Peace and rest. Wow. When you're going through struggles like we're going through, and maybe you've been betrayed, maybe you should practice what Ashley taught me last week. Yes, I said Ashley. Ashley, our photographer. How many of you enjoyed those pictures? Wow, she did an amazing job on those pictures. By the way, I don't want to see another red dress for a long time. Ashley did an amazing job, and it was fun to see everybody dressed up. It was fun to see the four-legged family members come in. We had a great time, but Ashley taught me something. You see, when she had the backdrop there, and that was good, she took pictures. And I don't know about you, but when I take a picture, I go, ping, ping. Right? Or now it's like, ding, ding. But you know what Ashley did? She chose to focus on something. She didn't allow anything else to distract what she wanted to focus on. And when you look at the pictures, you can tell if she focused on you or the backdrop. See, Ashley knew that the primary focus is you. And everything else is just in the background. And it could be even blurry. It's not important to focus on. Ashley said, you're important. Jesus says, I'm going to focus on you. Will you focus on me? And here's our struggle. Here's our challenge. As we close out this crazy year of 2020, and in every book ever written, there'll be an asterisk. There'll be a little star about 2020. And I believe for a lot of church-going people that we have not focused on Jesus in 2020, we have focused on everything around us. And that has taken our focus away, Peter. You focused on all the waves and all the storms and all the trials, and that has caused you to lose hope. Jesus says, but all I got to do is look to me, Peter. And the moment Peter looked up at Jesus, he saw Jesus' hand was stretched out, and he lifted Peter up out of the water. My friends, we got to get lifted up out of this 2020, because you and I have been focusing on what we've lost. We've been focusing on the frustration, the politics, the heartaches, the suffering. And Jesus says, but can't you stay focused on me? I will get you through these. I will promise you that if a door is being shut, it will never remain shut. And if I open up a door of opportunity for you, no one will ever shut it. And that's why these people, the betrayed people, needed to put all their hope, all their confidence, all their trust, and all their hope in Jesus, because he will never disappoint you. Trust in him with all your heart. Acknowledge him in all your ways, and he will make your path straight. What's 2021 going to look like for you? What are you going to focus on in 2021? Because if you think 2021 is going to be wonderful and a bed of roses, go get some coffee. Wake up. We're in a season of change, my friends. 2020 is preparing us for 2021. And there's going to be battles and there's going to be struggles. But there's going to be a faithful few, a remnant, who are going to take their lives and focus it on Jesus. Jesus knows our struggles. He knows our problems. He knows our difficulties. He knows our doubts. But he said, can you just trust me and focus on me? Look, stay focused on me. You've seen it time and time in situations like in rescues where the rescue worker, there's craziness happening, and he tells the person who's struggling, look at me. Look at me. Stay focused on me. Don't get distracted by everything else. Look at me. I will help you get through this. Yeah, you don't deserve it. Maybe you didn't bring it in your life. Maybe someone else caused it, but I am here for you. I notice you. I love you. I care for you. All you got to do is come and let me be in it with you. And he will. Amen. All you have to do is trust in him. Focus on him. And no matter what struggles, no matter what pain the world brings you, the Roman government brings you, or loved ones bring you, he will never leave you. He will never, ever forsake you. And I know that's easier preached than practiced. But I too have been in the fetal position. I too have struggled. I too have asked God to clarify his plans. And by the time he got me realigned, I saw everything that he was doing to make something beautiful out of that mess.